Hello, this is Gideon Rothstein, and this is Perek Vav of Sefer Amos, chapter 6 of the book of Amos, and it's a chapter that there will be some mention of punishment coming and of exile, as we've seen in many other chapters, but it takes up a topic that I have come across many times and I think is crucial to our experience of Judaism today as well, to the topic of luxury and of some of the negative ramifications of luxury. And so, as a lead-in to the Perek, I just want to mention a theory of the Rambam's, a central piece of the Rambam's recommendations for how one should live in this world, based on a pasuk, I think in Mishlei, pasuk says, "Bechol drachecha da'ehu." So, the Rambam says, what does it mean, "Bechol drachecha da'ehu"? How could it be that you could know Hashem, "Bechol drachecha"? So the Rambam says that the pasuk is in Mishlei, Perek Gimel, pasuk Vav, and the Rambam is in Shmone Prakim. It's an introduction to Avot. Bechol drachecha do'ehu, and he points out, Chazal say, even Bidvar Aveira. So the Rambam says, it's that in everything that you do, you should have it in mind that what you're doing is to try to ready yourself for Avodat Hashem, for your service of God. So you can go to sleep because you enjoy sleeping, and that'll come up in this parak, in this chapter, or you can go to sleep because you're tired, and in order to be able to serve Hashem better, you need to get some rest. Same thing with vacation, same thing with whatever it is. It is a standard of weighing our experience and our pleasures in this world that has to do with making sure that they are all being produced for the purpose of our service of God. Now, there's a lot of range within there. There could be a lot of disagreements. There could be a lot of versions of serving God within that. It doesn't have to be that there's one. It doesn't necessarily have to be. There's one right answer to the question of, so what does it mean to serve Hashem, or how is Bechol Drachecha Da'ehu to be lived out in a religious life? There is not necessarily a single or unitary answer to that question, nor does the Rambam suggest there is. But it's a set of questions that are going to be neglected by the people to whom Amos is addressing himself in this parak, and it's a standard that is worth paying attention to and thinking about. Is it that? And this is, I think, a model that I see very often lived out and experienced in the world in which we live in today. Is it that once I have, freed myself of all my responsibilities to God, I've given a good amount of tzedakah, and I've paid for my kids' Jewish education, and I've this and I've that. I've done by God, right? I've done right by God. Am I then free to indulge any luxury that I wish? Or is there even then a morality to how I spend my money and how I use my money that needs to be paid attention to? So in our parak, we're going to see that question raised significantly. And it's going to suggest that even if you thought the answer to that question was, well, fundamentally, yes, my money is mine to use as I wish and to use as I see fit, the parak is going to point out some of the damaging consequences of money and of wealth and of luxury that are being experienced by the people of the Northern Kingdom of Israel in Amos' time, and the tragedies to which that will lead. So Pasuk Vav starts off, Perek Vav starts off Pasuk Aleph, Hoy ha'sha'ananim b'tzion, those who are at ease in Tzion. So Tzion here would presumably be a reference to not just Tzion as in Yudah, as in the Southern Kingdom, but also could be the Northern Kingdom. And it is a reference, Shananim, where those who are calm and quiet and secure and confident. So the Radak points out the rich ones, they're Shananim, and then Habutchim Bahar Shamron, and they are confident, they are in the hills of Shamron, and they just feel comfortable. So Radak points out, and they're not upset about the other members of the Northern Kingdom who have already gone into Galut. Right, so the Radak points out, Ki Shamron, who Shinu Kudab Achronam, Yer Israel, and Sion, Yer Yudah. So he understands Sion meaning the Southern Kingdom as well. And there was a group of people who were still wealthy, right? You have large parts of the Northern Kingdom having already been taken into exile, but it doesn't affect the economy of the rest. So that, I think, is something we have today as well, meaning there have been times when the economy of one city or one area of a country is relatively good, even though that country is in the middle of losing a war or is in the process of fighting a war. Certainly, if we think about our experience in our days, the war in Iraq, when there are people dying and being killed, but they're not but that experience doesn't affect the mass of Americans, and their economy, at least until recently, was going along just fine, despite the fact the country was at war. So here too, You have Amos expressing a similar kind of experience. You have these people who are wealthy, and they're calm, they're confident, they have everything they need. Nikuvei Rishit HaGoyim Uvau Lahem Beit Yisrael. Nikuvei Rishit HaGoyim, Rashi thinks that they used to be the most praised among all of the nation, right? They were seen as the forefront of culture, of wealth, of whatever it is, among the nations of the world. Uvalahem Beit Yisrael, and it all came to them, Radak thinks is what we're saying, that it all came to them because of Hashem, not because of anything they did, and yet they instead did wrong and did thought that it came to them on their own, and they thought that it was all their success, and therefore they felt comfortable going among the nations, learning from them, and doing things like the nations were doing them. Pasuk bet ivru chalnei re'u l'chu misham chamat rabba redu gat plishtim atovim en amalokot ha'ile im rav givulam migvulchem. So the Navi says to them, so now go and check how great you are. Go down to Chalnei, which is Bavel, and go to Chamat, to Antiochia, and go to Plishtim. Go to all these people and see if are they so greater than you that you have to turn. Rashi says that it's that you have to turn to them and reject the Torah, and reject the Torah lifestyle, and reject what the Torah wants from you, and you have to instead adopt their mode of behavior and their mode of being. So we're going to see what their mode of behavior and mode of being is in a few minutes, but I, of course, since I, one of my central experiences of Navi is to see where it is relevant to us. So I wonder about that. Is our mode of luxury, our understanding of what luxury is and the role that luxury plays in our lives, is it a Jewish mode of luxury? Do we have a Jewish theology, a Jewish theory of what it means to be an Orthodox Jew and have luxury? Or is it that we think that wherever there's not Torah, we don't see Torah, we don't know Torah, we don't know that there's Kashrus or Shabbos or Yom Tov in the way, so then we assume whatever you do with luxury, it's all fine. So that's a question that will come up in a minute, but in Pasuk Gimel, the Navi already points out some other piece of it that's a problem. So you turn away Yom Ra. You turn away from the belief that there will ever be a time of Ra coming to you. So Rashi thinks it means you're turning yourselves towards Yom Ra by your actions, and by you're setting yourselves up for having to sit in galut. But then he quotes a devar acher that you're mevazim al nevuat yemeira, that you reject and you mock the predictions that things will ever go bad, right? Vatikishun shevet chamas. You also think that the time of chamas, when there will be lawlessness and punishment coming, you think that won't ever come. So that is a complaint that reverberates for me. That is a complaint that their wealth leads them to believe that there's never anything they have to worry about, that it never could be true. So Nevi'im come and say, you're not following the Torah. The list of how they're not following the Torah is not important here. What is important here is that the Nevi'im are coming to them and saying it's going to end, and they are rejecting it and mocking it. Let me just read a little bit more about their luxuries, then we'll see why that, I'll explain to you why I think that that's so striking, so hair-raising, really. They sleep on beds of marble or ivory, suchim al arsotam, and they are. So, suchim al arsotam, Rashi offers the possibility that the JPS English offers also, that they just like to lie in bed, they just like to relax and to luxuriate in bed, and they just get pleasure out of it, and they're just doing it for the fun of it. Vochim kari mitzon, and they eat lambs from their flock, vagalim mitochim arbeik, and eat fatted calves, right, from the corral where they put the calves together, where they kept them, so they just are enjoying their pleasures. And this is a complaint about pleasure per se. So, shechvim amitochein, they're lying on these beds, suchim al arzotam, Rashi quotes that it might just mean, as I said, that they lie in bed, they enjoy lying in bed, and that's a problem. I remember years ago having conversations, so as people get older, they learn this perforce, but I remember in my 20s, talking to friends or mentioning to friends that I think there's a problem with just lying in bed, just enjoying the lying in bed. There's something wrong about it, that doing it for its own pleasurable sake, and they would reject that idea, and they would think that there's nothing wrong with it. I remember years ago, I'm not even sure that I think this is true anymore, so I won't say who said it to me, but one of my rebbeim once said to me that he thought that the reason for Zman Kriyat Shema being so, even if people tend to wake up later nowadays, then the Gemara seemed to think when it spoke about Zman Kriyat Shema was that maybe there's Judaism telling you you shouldn't be lying in bed that long. So whether or not that's true about Hilchot Kriyat Shema, about the laws of reciting the Shema in the morning, is the topic for another time. But here certainly the Navi is complaining about this. Rashi then also points out that Chazal had a suggestion that Suchim al Asotam also implies Suchim from like bad or stale or rotten. There's something wrong with their beds. And there's an interesting bar in Shabbos of Samach Bet Amid Bet where Rav Yossi Rav Chanina thought what it meant was that they would, so you got to remember that in those days they didn't have bathrooms, they didn't have facilities, separate facilities, so they would have pots. And that Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Chanina thought that their conduct, their inappropriate conduct, was that they would urinate unclothed in front of their beds. So I think what he is suggesting is there's something wrong with that because you're supposed to see your bed as a place that you sleep and you conduct yourself in certain refined kinds of ways. You do certain kinds of private activities husbands and wives do in their beds, and that's what the bed is for. And that to turn a room like that into something else is a lack of modesty, a lack of appropriate awareness of what should happen, perhaps. But in any case, Rabbi Avol rejects it. Rabbi Avol rejects it because he says that why would we deserve exile for doing that? Just because you do that, so it's inappropriate and it's not refined as much as it could be. But the Perek is going to talk about the fact in Pasuk Zion that we're going to go into exile. So it can't be that. So Rabbi Avol suggests instead, though, Suchim al Arsatam, they used to that the people used to swap wives, right? They would, and that therefore their beds were defiled by that. So where did Rabbi Avo come up with that? I think it's possible to argue that Rabbi Avo is suggesting that when you have a culture and an environment which is focused just on pleasure for pleasure's sake, so then one of the pleasures that become a pleasure for pleasure's sake is a sexual pleasure, then it's not so clear if everybody agrees to it. Right, when I was growing up in the 70s, and I think now there's a TV show sort of reminiscing to that, there was a time when people suggested that. It turned out that people's emotional makeups are such that it's very difficult for them to feel comfortable with that kind of what's called swinging, of just swapping partners all the time. But that it is something that is an outgrowth of a culture of pleasure for pleasure's sake. And the same thing about the eating. They're just eating a lot of lamb and a lot of fatted calves. So what's wrong with eating? It's just meat. So we live in a culture where there's a lot of meat eating going on. So aside from the health risk, it turns out it's not good for people to eat so much meat. There's a problem in the pleasure of it in and of itself. So I mentioned that there's an interesting Gemara on Daf in Psachim, Daf Memtet Amid Aleph, in which it makes that point, and people don't necessarily know this Gemara, and they don't necessarily internalize this Gemara. Gemara says, Tanya Rabbi Shimon Omer. It's a price. Rabbi Shimon says, if you eat it as soon as Shina Mitzvah, you're not allowed to. Talmid Chacham is not allowed to eat there. So Talmid Chacham here doesn't only mean because you're a scholar. It means if you are aware of what Torah is really all about. So it says, what is a Seudah Shina Shel Mitzvah? What is an improper Seudah? Rabbi Yochanan says, if a Bat Kohen is marrying a Yisrael, if a priest's daughter is marrying a Yisrael, which happens all the time, but here, apparently in the Gemara, what they mean is a Bat Kohen who's marrying a Yisrael who doesn't care about Torah and mitzvot and things like that is not of the standard. Kohanim are supposed to be those, and this also you have a lot today to think about. Kohanim are supposed to be those who teach Torah and are very focused on Torah and living Torah lifestyles. So that would be a bad match. The same, and then the next phrase is also, or the daughter of a Torah scholar marrying an Amar is marrying somebody who doesn't care about Torah, isn't invested in Torah. So not only, so that's what Rav Yochanan is saying is that our pasuk is telling us that you should be eating at a meal like that. And then the Gemara goes on, Rabbi Yitzchak says, Kol anena misudat ha-reshut l'sof goleh. If you eat a sudat ha-reshut, meaning a meal, you enjoy a meal, just a big, fancy meal, that has no underlying redeeming value to it, it's just eating for its own sake, so that will end up leading into galut. So Rabbi Yitzchak is at least understanding that our pasuk here is complaining about the idea of just having pleasurable meals. And I think that's a question that needs to be raised in our culture. I remember a couple of years ago, my wife and I went out for, I think, her birthday or anniversary, some occasion. There's an occasion that we thought was worth celebrating. We went to Prime Grill on a Tuesday night or a Monday night. And we went late because we got there late for whatever reason. So it's 9:30 or 10 o'clock on a Monday or Tuesday night, and the place is packed with people. So I said to somebody, is there a special night? I said to one of the serving people, is there a special night here? He says, no, this is the way it is. So what we have, I think, in where I live in New York, but wherever people are living, I think it's something to question. And you have a pasuk in Amos, you're saying, here you are, having all these pleasures. You just like lying in bed. You just enjoy lying in bed and relaxing and having a good time and eating meat a lot. And they play the harp, and they think that, or the lute, whatever the instrument it is, and they're playing like David, and they think that they're playing like David. So the difference is that when David HaMelech played his musical instruments, he played them as part of his composing of Tehillim, or his shearing, or his singing of Tehillim. And so his enjoyment of music was for the purpose of increasing and enhancing his service of Hashem. Or I pointed out previously, I recently learned with my daughter that the Rambam says that to become a Navi, he thought, his understanding of the way Nevuah works, is that you need to get into the right mood. So that B'nai HaNevi'im, those who are looking to become Nevi'im, would often play musical instruments in front of them to calm themselves down in order to be able to get in the right mood to be open to the word of Hashem coming to them. So in all those cases, the music is not an end in and of itself. It is for the sake of achieving something greater. So that is a positive and valuable use of the gift of music that God placed in the world. But what these people are doing, what the Navi is complaining about, they're not doing it for those purposes. They're just playing music because they enjoy the playing of music, and that is something that Amos B'Shem Hashem is complaining about, just the enjoyment of it, pleasure for pleasure's sake. And that's a problem. Pasuk Vav as well. Hashotim b'mizrak yayin v'reishit shpanim yimshachu v'lo nechlu al shever Yosef. They drink b'mizrak yayin. So there's a discussion in the Gemara about what mizrak yayin mean, and one option is they drink from these two-sided cups, so that they sort of just, it's a fancy thing, that it's just a fancy way of drinking so that everybody has fun with it. Another possibility is they used to throw cups back and forth to themselves. There's some discussion about the Gemara about whether you might be allowed to do that at weddings to celebrate. But for Eshit Shmanim Yimshach, when they anoint themselves with the best oils, and they're doing this, they're doing this at a time when both the beginnings of the destruction have already come, and aside from that, they have predictions of the destruction coming, and they're not right. So Rashi thinks it's what's upcoming, that they heard from the Nevi'im that it's coming, that punishment is coming, and that the troubles are coming, and they're not bothered by it. So it's not only that they're indulging these pleasures for pleasure's sake, that's a problem, but it's even worse, because at the time that they're doing this, that they're indulging all of these pleasures, they already know, or they should know, if they had only paid attention, that times of destruction are coming, and they're not doing anything about it. They don't think it's a problem. They're not worried about it. It doesn't affect them. And the reason it doesn't affect them is because they have confidence that their wealth is such that they would never suffer again. And they would never suffer. They would never have to worry about things going wrong or bad for them. And I think the applications to our times are clear, so I won't expand upon them, I won't elaborate upon them. But that question of how much do you allow your wealth and your luxury to let you think that, well, it'll never go bad, it'll all be fine, everything, this is a permanent state, we are in a permanent state of good and blessedness, and we don't have to worry. So that is part of what Amos is complaining about, both about the ignoring of the future, and about the ignoring of things happening to others around them. Lachain, Pasuk Zayin, Lachain Atay Yiglu B'Rosh Kalim, V'Sar Mirzach Siruchim. And therefore they're going to go into exile in front of nations, and they will no more have these expensive meals. So they're no longer going to have these meals, and Rashi says they're no longer going to have their arrogance and their conceitedness. And this is being pointed to as a source of exile. So look at the Sifrei and Devarim, it also says that. It says, Amar lehem Moshe Yisrael, that Moshe already told the Jewish people, when you get into the land, you're only going to rebel against God from a lot of eating and drinking, from the comfort of eating and drinking. It's psukim in the Torah, pentochal v'savata, you'll eat and you'll be satiated, in other psukim. But also, you see it in the Aseret HaShvatim, in our psukim, ha-shochvim al-mitot chein, ha-shochvim mizrkei yayin, and therefore they're going to go into exile, and then you're going to find Yimon HaMashiach as well, v'yishman yishrun v'yiv'at. So if we can hope and wonder whether we are living close to the time of Yimon HaMashiach, certainly I think we need to incorporate and internalize these psukim to understand that the misuse of luxury, and part of the problem I think is that we don't even any longer recognize how luxurious it is, and so we need to, I think, I urge us, all of us, myself, to think about and to recognize and to incorporate in our experience of our lives how much luxury we have, and to recognize luxury is a good thing in some ways, but it's also damaging in other ways, and that damage is often not realized and not understood in ways that could be easily problematic. So pasuk chet goes on, nishba Hashem Elokim b'nafsho, Hashem swears by himself, numa Hashem Elokim tzvakot mita'ev anochi et gaon Yaakov emenotav saneti, I hate the pride of Yaakov, meaning the fact that they're so wealthy and they're so rich and they're so taken with themselves, right? Just a point that the academies where the Gaonim taught, one of them was called, I think, also Gaon Yaakov. And I hate their palaces, Vizgarti Ir Mulo'ah, and therefore I'm going to destroy, or I'm going to give it over to the nations, I'm going to forfeit it, Ir Mulo'ah, a city in all of its inhabitants, everything that goes in that city. So this is the punishment part, right? It's going to lead to exile, it's going to lead to discretion. There's going to be 10 people left in the house, they're going to die. And his uncle, just interesting, Rashi suggests, or Radak has one opinion that thinks that Misarfo is an uncle from the mother's side, which is interesting to me that there would be a different term, right? We tend to think of relatives on the mother's side, relatives on the father's side as largely the same. It's not clear that Tanakh did, it's not clear that Gemara did, so here this would be an interesting possibility. Radak doesn't think it necessarily means that. It might also mean somebody who's coming along, and the reason, lo ti atzamim and abai, they're going to remove the corpses from the house, and the purpose of moving the corpses is to avoid their smell, and then there was some suggestion they might burn them to avoid the smell. Velmar la shebi yakate abayid haodimak, and they'll say back to somebody who's left in the house, is there anybody else back there? Vemar afes, and he'll say, no, there's nobody there. Vemar has, he'll say, be quiet, meaning don't go on with talking about that. And then they'll say, kilo lazkir b'shem Hashem. And part of what led to all this is that they didn't think about Hashem. Pasuk gidal kini Hashem mitzaveh v'ikah habayit hagadol v'sisim habayit hakaton b'kiim. All the houses, all the big houses, the small houses are going to be destroyed. They're going to be smashed to bits. So can horses run on the rocks if you can plow it with bakar, with cattle, with oxen, and you have turned justice into rosh, like porer rosh v'la'ana in Parshat Nitzavim, that you turn it into a terrible thing, to a bad thing, and you turn the fruits of righteousness l'la'ana. You're just happy for no davar, for nothing. When they say that it's our strength, we've captured Karnayim. So the JPS thinks the Karnayim is a reference to various towns that they've captured, and that's what the Radak says as well, that Yeravam ben Yoash was stronger than his enemies. He conquered various enemies and he recaptured various cities that hadn't been theirs. Rashi thinks that it doesn't mean that. It means just they're celebrating their wealth, and Karnayim also means there's power over the poor. As we've seen in previous chapters, they take more money and they make more money. So Pasuk Gidal, Kini Mekim Alechem Beit Yisrael, Nu Hashem Lokei Tzevakot, Hak Tzevakot, Goy, V'lachatzu Alechem Milavo Chamad, Anachal Arava. So I'm going to bring up into you a nation, and they're going to pressure you, and they're going to cause you oppression and distress and problems, from Levo Chamat, which is in the northern western border of Israel, all the way down to Nachal Arava, which is in the southwestern border, right? It's going to be all of, in other words, it's going to be all of Eretz Israel is going to be under pressure. That's the way Rashi has it. And so this last pasuk, or the second last pasuk of Halu B'choskinu L'kachnu Lanu Karinayim, so the Sefer Ein Devarim also says that that's part of a similar thing in the Torah. They'll say, we conquered, it was our hand that made us strong, and Hashem did not do this. So that what the chapter is pointing out in various different ways, that just we don't accept, I think, today. I think that the common attitude towards the messages that I'm suggesting here would be that they are exaggerated or untrue or wrongly said, but that the Perek is telling us that the experience of luxury as just something that you can just experience as much as you want without having to pay attention to the purposes and the causes of it is themselves a destructive thing, and it's a thing that can lead to destruction and that can instigate destruction, can instigate loss and exile and all those things, and it all starts with the ability to look at luxury and to say about luxury, this is just luxury, I just get to enjoy this, it's just fine. So that's a question that the examples are simple ones, but one example that is perhaps not as, doesn't hit quite as close to home as others might, but and therefore I'll use it, but I think there are other examples that hit much closer to home and should be considered. Somebody told me that's a signature term of mine, should be considered, but let me just say, and we should think carefully about them, but if you think about, let's say, certain kinds of cars, in the 1990s, in the early parts of this decade, there were many people who bought cars they didn't need, that wasted gas tremendously. So the Hummer is the best example of it, but it's not the only example, right? And that gas mileage, at a time, and this is after, we live in a world after which, in the 1970s, there was an oil embargo. I was made aware of it, I was reminded of it, because I recently read a book about the elections in the late 70s and early 80s. So issues of oil dependency were serious issues, and were important issues back then. And so we already had seen, it wasn't even just that we first came across the question of oil dependency in the 1990s. As a country, we had experienced the negative sides of dependency on Arab nations, on nations that could easily turn against us and easily use oil to create problems for us and to choke us off at the pump. And yet, in the 1990s, the major auto companies found out that SUVs of various sorts was a great source of income because people liked them, liked buying them. And so they went ahead and they mass produced them, and they built a lot of their economy, a lot of their business model on selling them. They became a huge seller for them, and they got back to, in a lot of ways, to solvency for them. So that was a temporary solution, but it created, in certain industries, a boom, and you had all these people driving these cars that are, if you think about them a little bit further, unnecessary and problematic and are creating issues and problems. So that would be an example, I think, of where our appetite for luxury gets in the way of our understanding and of our experience of the world the way it should be, and is one of the kinds of things that Amos is talking about. Then there's the question of how much you sleep, how much sleep is appropriate, what kinds of parties are appropriate, what kinds of pleasures are appropriate, what kinds of musical instruments, what's the point of playing music or being involved in music? Jews have a long history of being involved in playing musical instruments, and you know, we think of that as culture, and we think culture is very important. So the question of the value of culture and the role that it plays in our lives is raised here by Amos as well. David HaMelech shows a use of music and culture that was very valuable and very worthwhile. And then the question is, when other people get involved in the culture of music and are concerned with the culture of music, are they using it for that good and valuable reason, like the Kinnor of David, or are they, in fact, just playing the musical instrument for the pure pleasure of it, earning themselves the opprobrium that Amos mentions here? So all these questions, all these topics, all this issue of luxury, and the connection being drawn to exile, right? It's not, and therefore you oppress the poor, or as we've seen in other chapters, you oppress the poor in order to support that lifestyle. That we've seen elsewhere. But here it's just the focus on the fact of the interest in luxury, and the fact of luxury fueling the feeling that it's all me, it's my money, I did it, I made it, I succeeded at it, and therefore I can feel confident that we'll go that way into the future. So all of that are the damaging issues and the damaging consequences of luxury that Amos is pointing out here and is encouraging, trying to work to make sure that we come to learn the lesson and therefore perhaps avoid the fullest consequences of this addiction to luxury that was true in their time and that perhaps is true of at least many people in our time. Have a great day.